Several years ago, author Tom Peters asked this question. If there is one thing that you could change that would fundamentally improve the way you do business, what would it be? On this week's episode, we're offering you one very important suggestion. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 128 of the Resilient Journey podcast, presented by the Resilience Think Tank. This week, Mark is joined by Eric Inez, who says that he had done business continuity for years, but always felt like something was missing. It wasn't until he got into risk management that business continuity seemed to feel complete. Eric explains that as practitioners, we need to embrace adaptability and flexibility in order to build a program that resonates with our leadership team. He talks about the one thing you may want to do that could fundamentally improve your practice, and that is really knowing the business.
Eric, welcome to the podcast. I'm happy to have you here. Just start, if you don't mind, with just a quick introduction of who you are.
Sure. And thank you for having me, Mark. Really happy to be here with you. So I'm Eric Inez. I'm the head of enterprise risk management and resilience for Bridgestone West. Been in this industry for about 16, 17 years now, across many different aspects of it, utilities, maritime, financial services. So quite a diverse set of industries there.
Well, you and I met in Orlando. We were together at DRJ Spring. And after a presentation, you said something that instantly made me want you to come on the podcast. You said that you'd done business continuity for years, but you always felt like something was missing. I thought that was really interesting because then you said it wasn't until you got into risk management that business continuity felt complete. So right. Can you explain that? Like what did you mean by that?
Yeah, no. So I remember back before having the context of the broader risk environment of the organization, I would plan for scenario specific components, right? And some folks in our industry do all hazards approach, whatever it may be, but you're really planning for the outcome of something that you're not that familiar with, right? And as you start understanding the different risks within the organization, not only do you understand what the landscape looks like, but what is the impact of that happening? What is the likelihood of it happening? And then even more so, what is going to be the context that the organization is going to have to deal with this issue in, right? I think understanding those prior to moving into the planning phase for whatever the event is or whatever the operational outage may be, it's just an invaluable amount of information that you can have as a BCP practitioner.
So a lot of times these things start off with a business impact analysis. We do a BIA. There's a lot of people in our industry that are kind of railing against the BIA right now. And I personally believe that some of that comes from not that the BIA is bad, but maybe we're not doing it properly or we're not using the information as well as we could. But by thinking about the risk assessment side of it, that makes it a little bit more of a complete picture. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, and with the BIA, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of people in the industry that knock down the BIA. And I think the BIA really goes back to what questions are you asking in that BIA, right? What is the quality of the questions that you're asking the business in that BIA? I've seen BIAs get done where people come in and they say, if this happens, how does that impact your department or your function? I've seen others that come in and say, tell me all the things that could go wrong with your department or function and what would you do if that happens, right? I'm not a big fan of that approach. I'm a bigger fan of coming in and asking them what they do, how they do it, and what they need to do it, right?
Exactly right.
There's this concept of, we look at work, and I've talked about this at every organization that I've worked in, we look at work as this linear event, right? It starts here, and it goes all the way to the end, and it happens the same way every time that it's done, right? But in reality, it's not. It just fluctuates, right? Environmental conditions, real work conditions, operational pressures really change how that work is done. And understanding the variances and the deviation that those experts hands-on need to make to actually accomplish work successfully, I think that's where the meat of the BIA needs to happen, and having a hybrid approach to understand the risks that are associated with the execution of that process, right? Those, if you look at the BIA from that perspective, you're able to do a hybrid BIA and risk assessment at the same time, which is what we do in my organization. And it yields much better data and allows you to have better readiness overall for the function.
One of the things you said there was identifying different things that can go wrong. And you know, as soon as you come up with a list of three things, there's going to be that fourth thing that comes up. If you come up with a list of six things, there's going to be a seventh thing, something you haven't thought of that's going to go wrong, right? I mean, it's just the way our life works.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's the difference between how you imagine that work is performing in your organization to how it's actually performed, right? Mm-hmm. And that goes through the entire cycle, because when an incident happens, right? And I'm sure you've done a ton of incident investigations and read a ton of incident investigation reports. The number one cause that people will tell you for an incident is human error, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, well, but as humans, we're fallible. We make errors. So if I fall from my roof, is gravity the root cause of why I fell? Right? It's sort of looking at it that way, right? And it's really not that the individual failed the organization, is that we've built a system that requires perfection from the individual. So the organization really failed the worker.
Yeah. And so what you're focusing on is the dependencies that different people or different functions have in order to perform the work. And then if we start looking at it from a dependency risk mitigation perspective, it's a more complete picture.
And understanding the systems in play and how they work with each other.
Yeah. And when you say systems, you don't just mean software systems, you mean ecosystems and
exactly like that. Operational systems, processes. Yes. All the above.
Yeah. I like that. I think it's a much more fulsome view of the analysis, and whether you call it a BIA or a risk assessment, I like that merged approach that you talked about. You know, it's easy to talk about things in theory, right? So one of the things that I've been trying to do with my guests here lately is get a little bit more specific, talk about real tangible things. So what are two or three things that maybe the average business continuity person can do to incorporate risk management techniques into their program?
I say the first one is take a look at your overall corporate strategic plan for that year or that cycle and tie back your program objectives to it, right? If you work for an organization that's looking to grow, then you need to plan for readiness and adaptability to feel that growth, right? If you're in a regulatory environment, you need to tie back to those regulatory requirements so that you're able to be within good standings of your regulating agencies and allow the organization to sort of flourish within that. The other, I would say, and this is a fairly new concept, is looking at an integrated assurance model. So basically what I mean by that is you have all these second line of defense functions, right? You have business continuity planning, you have information security, GRC, you have ERM, and a lot of us are asking the business for the same documentation, the same evidence multiple times, right? And there's really a benefit on these groups coming together and hitting up the business once instead of five or six different times. But then at the same time, be able to leverage and share their scope within that analysis across those second line of defense functions so that we're not looking at things in silos, right? Yeah. That would be the second one. And then finally, what I would say is really have thoughtful conversations with all levels of the organization and bring those things back to the different levels. And what I mean by that is frontline employees are the ones interacting with the risk. Your executive team are the ones that are making all the decisions on how they interact with that risk. They really need to know what's really causing these people to lose sleep. And these people need to know that the executives actually care about it. It's not just a monetary decision on how they handle those risks.
You know, I hadn't planned on asking you this, but you're kind of triggering a whole different line of questions here. I'll try to keep it just to maybe one additional follow-up, but a lot of the people I talked to in Orlando at the conference, we kept hearing things like either people were recently laid off or they were worried that they were going to get laid off. And similar to my thought about the whole BIA, and maybe we're not doing some of that right, I'm wondering if our industry is not doing as good of a job as we could in demonstrating value to our employers. And I think a lot of that is because we're not having the right conversations. So to tie back in the enterprise risk, you know, model, and to look at the top things that are on our register, and then to evaluate those from a business continuity standpoint, goes a long way in adding value to the organization, doesn't it? I mean, it's different than just saying, oh, what do you do? It's important. Like, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, and obviously you have a lot more creativity when you're in a non-regulated environment, but even in a regulated environment, as long as you meet with those requirements, you can go above and beyond those. So essentially, you know, I think I've seen a lot of folks in our industry that are very stagnant in how they build out their program and execute it. And we need to have, I think, more adaptability and flexibility in how we build programs for our organizations. The program should be tailored to the organization, right? And what I mean by that is, if you look at a program that I put together for a natural gas utility, it's not the same program that I put together for a financial technology firm. It's not the same program that I put together for a tire manufacturer. It's not the same program that I put together for a financial services firm. We should serve sort of as the primary care physicians for the organization, right? We need to know our patient really well. We need to know what medication they're on so that we don't prescribe them something else that's going to interact with what they're taking. And we need to, by looking at KPIs and KRIs, sort of understand where they are and where they're trending, right? If we're not able to do that, we're just a compliance function that's checking a box.
Yep.
That box could be checked by either an external party that is going to do it at half the cost, or it can be checked by sort of offshore or outsource function, right? Because all you're looking for is to send somebody an email that says, update this document. And we need to move beyond that as an industry, I think.
Right, right. It's important for us as practitioners to not be lazy and to have some creativity, as you said. I love the whole idea about the adaptability. We talk about fit for function programs. The whole concept of the ISO 22301 standard is it's got to fit the context of the organization. And yeah, and that means sometimes getting outside of our traditional processes of doing things and really being custom or tailored, as you said. I really like that. If we're going to do this and we're going to start thinking about more risk management, what's the best way to approach this subject with our leadership team? And maybe what are some of the selling points of including risk management in our business continuity functions?
You know, it's funny because at DRJ, this the comment of like, know your audience came up quite a bit, right? I think I heard it at least at 5 different sessions.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that applies to leadership groups as well, right? We have to understand what really drives them, right? So when we're talking about executive leadership, they have a detailed business plan in place that they're executing for the next year, 3 years, 5 years, right? And we need to tie our objectives to that. And I mentioned it earlier, in some cases, it's going to be growth. In some cases, it's going to be keeping or increasing the current market share that they have. And others are looking for innovation. And the programs that we built and the conversations that we have with risk around them have to match that, right? It's if your leadership team is hyper-focused on bringing a new segment to market, that's what you need to focus your risk management program on. It's let's understand the risk of this new project or product. Let's understand the risk of the market segment that we're going after. talking to them about, you know, hurricane season being a little bit more predicted to be higher this year is not going to add any value to them. They're going to see it as noise, and they're going to automatically dismiss anything that you bring to the table.
Speaking of noise, saying we've completed 17 of 20 BIAs and 18 of our business continuity plans have been updated and we've exercised 7 of them. I mean, that's not adding value either. We need to speak to the business about what matters to the business, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's sort of that customer-centric focus that you need to have with your program. We need to be able to sell our function just like our organization sell our product or services that they go to market. It's the same approach. We have to look at our department as a provider of services that our internal stakeholders or internal clients have the option to procure or not, right?
Right.
And at which level are they going to procure them?
Yeah, I've always said that, you know, as a good business continuity program owner, you have to have marketing skills. You got to have some customer service skills in order to get out there and promote the program too. It's part of the socialization of it.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that because I've seen, and I think it's gotten worse over the last probably 5 to 6 years. We tend to weaponize fear to try to drive engagement and resources for our programs. So we'll go to a leadership group and say, hey, all these bad things are going to happen. And what are you going to do when they happen? And we're not ready. And, you know, and I've also heard the planning is like insurance, right? You either pay up front or you pay more in the rears kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But instead of having those conversations about all these bad things that could happen, let's have the conversation of, are we really looking through the windshield as we're moving the organization forward, or are we looking through the rearview mirror, right? Because I'm more interested in the things that we're not looking at, the emerging components, than I am of the stuff that we know it's going to happen every year, right? Hurricanes is a good example. I know they're going to happen every year in a specific area of the world. I know that if I'm in a seismic zone, that I'm more than likely going to experience an earthquake of some magnitude within the next X number of years. That's valuable information, but that can be the selling point for you to get more resources, for you to be brought into the table for new projects, for new initiatives, for new products going to market and so on.
So you and I met in Orlando, as I mentioned, and you actually introduced the presentation that Steph McCluskey and I did. And one of the things we said in that presentation was, are the skills that we have as resilience professionals, are they in demand? And the first place that you can check as to whether they're in demand or not is right within your own organization, right within your own leadership team. And so if your organization is going through a crisis, and we saw this with the pandemic, and they're not coming to you as the head of business continuity, if they're not seeing your business continuity program as a resource to help them navigate through whatever it is they're going through, that's a problem. So I'm going to ask you, what are some tips that you would give to our colleagues to help make sure we can demonstrate that value to our leadership team?
Yeah, I think the first one is, it's really knowing the business, right? And knowing how the business operates and knowing business fundamentals. I think that is one thing that is skipped in a lot of the professional practices and the things that you need to do to be a successful business continuity practitioner. And I mean, think about it. Our role is to understand what's critical within the business, understand the complexity of how things interact with each other, and then put a plan in place to have continuity of operations and mitigation of risk efforts. But if we can't even read a financial statement or understand what percentage of market share we make up or understand strategic business objectives and just business fundamental components, we can't tie anything back to that and we can't speak to it with leadership. Right. And that's, I think that's one of the keys when it comes to explaining what we do, is that if we're able to relate it back to something that's known and something that's talked about frequently within that audience, It just sticks, right? If I go in and I start talking about and throwing acronyms, well, we're doing a BIA and we're doing a risk assessment, we're talking about impact, it's going to become noise to them, right? But if I go in and I say, you know, as part of our strategic objectives, you know, we're looking to identify the value chain within our overall operational footprint and make sure that we have adequate sourcing, adequate planning, adequate output of product for specific business segments. Now I've just connected what we're trying to do back to their overall strategic business plan. Now it makes sense. And now it's something that's front and center to them every single day. And I'm just layering something on top of it that's going to help them achieve that plan, right?
Yeah,
rather than be a distraction.
Again, it's practical. It's meaningful. It speaks to what's important to them. So I'm assuming, based on all of this, that you're a proponent for the business continuity program organizationally to roll up under the risk manager's office, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, my last three organizations have been structured that way. I think that the business continuity component is really one of the functions that heavily identifies operational risk. And operational risk is a subcomponent of enterprise risk altogether, right? Mm-hmm. So functions like physical security, business continuity, health and safety, facilities, these are all identifying a lot of operational risks that really need to roll up through the enterprise component. BCP is a little bit different because BCP is taking that operational risk identified, and then it's actually playing a consultancy role in helping the organization plan and mitigate some of those identified risks, right? So it, to me, makes sense to have it there. There's just so many synergies that I don't believe it really fits anywhere else.
Now, that's not the case, though, for a lot of organizations. They're not rolled up under risk management. And I've been in a situation before where I've tried to coordinate with risk, they're like, well, what do you mean you want to do a risk assessment as part of your business impact analysis? And they feel like, oh, maybe it turns into a bit of a turf war, or we're stepping on, you know, their toes or whatever. What advice would you give to our colleagues who might be going through something similar to that?
Yeah, I think it goes back down to stakeholder management, right? I think having a conversation with that head of risk or that risk group, rather than to say, hey, I'm going out to do this assessment, and what do you guys have now? Are you doing this assessment? More have the conversation of, here's what I'm trying to identify. Are you guys already capturing this sort of data? If not, can we collaborate on building something that I can include as part of my process? I want to make sure that my scoring scales, the way that I structure my risk assessment, it matches your methodology, which is what the organization is used to. And I want to be able to give you this data to roll up into your overall enterprise risk level, because it is going to shed more of a light on the operational risk profile of the organization by having this component be complete. So approaching it from that sense, I think, will alleviate some of those components. I tell you, I've been the risk person in that scenario where somebody has reached out to me and said, hey, we did a risk assessment and we have all these findings. And the first thing in my mind I think of is, what methodology did you use? How did you score this? Doesn't, like, we have a right standard for the organization that the organization knows. And then the other component is the organization going to think that it's part of the overall ERM process? And then once we go engage, they're going to say, well, you guys were already here a month ago, right? So it goes back even to that integrated assurance model of making sure that if you're looking at the assessment from a specific scope, great, but let's have it be a collaborative effort and that we both benefit from that data that was gathered.
You're right. And that does go back to the customer service aspect of our program, because if we feel like, well, Eric was just here and he just asked me these questions, why are you asking them again? Now we have an annoyed customer, and that's not good. And it's interesting that you said what you said about, well, what methodology did you use? I was just working with someone, two different consultants, same customer. I went in, did business continuity. He went in and did risk management. But because we know each other and because we work together so well, he said, hey, what did you use in your BIAs for determining impact?
Right.
And then he was able to leverage that in his risk assessment. And the customer was like, oh, yeah, we just did this with Mark. But it wasn't that negative way. Hey, we just did this with Mark. It was, we're going to leverage what we did with Mark.
Right.
And it made a lot more sense. All right. This is probably the hardest question for you. You mentioned to me that you're a bit of a musician, and I admire that. I love music as well. So if you were speaking to a large crowd and you got to choose the song that you would have played as you were walking to the podium, what song would you pick and why?
I would say Three Little Birds by Bob Marley, right? Like, don't worry about a thing. Just everything's going to be all right. Like, even when we're going through a crisis, just the higher you go in that sort of a cortisol spike, the less effective you're going to be. So the more you're able, and, you know, I've handled a few major events in my career, and I've always, every time I get that notification and I go into my first interaction with the incident, I always give myself about a minute to two internally to panic, right? It's sort of like, okay, get it out of the way, get it out of the system, get all the butterflies, get the shaky hands, and then it's done, right? Like, it's not going to happen again. You did it. You felt the emotion, knock it out,
yeah,
and go in and execute with just a calm demeanor, because everybody's going to look to you at that point for that, right? And the way that you react to an incident is going to really tell the organization how effective you are in your role and whether or not you're the right person for that role.
Emotions are contagious, aren't they? And if you can maintain that calm.
Yeah.
I love that, 100%. Man. You're the first guest with a Bob Marley reference. I love it. Such a chill song. What a great message. Thank you for that one. I really, really like that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the Florida vibes in me, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's everything Irie, man. It's all right. It's all good.
Yeah. Exactly. It's all Irie.
All right. So, hey, listen, Eric, this has been great. How can people connect with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm also on the advisory board for the Crisis Ready Institute and on the editorial board for DRJ. So if you look into those organizations, you'll be able to get my contact information as well.
That sounds great. Eric, thanks for doing this. I deeply appreciate you being here. And the insights, really, really good. Thank you.
No, thank you for having me, Mark. It's been a blast.
We want to thank Eric Inez for being our guest this week and dropping some cool vibes and great insights. The Resilient Journey is a Resilience Think Tank production. Next week, we are doing a check on the weather. We'll talk about climate change and its impact on your business continuity strategies, as we're joined by our friends from Storm Geo. So join us, won't you, as we continue our resilient journey.